This is Weekends with Jason Olbourn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Well, how about that interview with Dr. Chetty in the last hour? If that doesn't motivate you to know that not only are we going to win, but we can now be assured that all you need to do is be happy, not take on all the world's problems yourself, and the world will become what we've always hoped it was. That is the very reason why you chose to be born right now for this moment in history. I don't know if I can inspire you much more than that, and if you've missed it, I encourage you to go back, but we're going to go up to the next level now because I'm going to introduce you to another superstar. That's right, Taylor Hudak is here. She is an investigative journalist targeting all of the areas that we need to be informed. And we're going to get into a discussion about multiple things involving COVID, Julian Assange, the European Union, and a home country of Hungary, where the Prime Minister is coming out and virtually demanding that that country take on the EU and get as far away as possible, because enough is enough. Well, Taylor Hudak is an American-Hungarian journalist based in Budapest, Hungary. She covers issues focused on human rights, free speech, health and law. She researches, writes and produces video reports and interviews for The Last American Vagabond. And she's a contributor to Children's Health Defence Europe. Taylor works closely with Doctors for COVID Ethics, an organisation of doctors and scientists dedicated to educating the public on health, science and medical ethics. Taylor Hudak, welcome to Weekends.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's terrific to have your company all the way from the other side of the planet. Who knew that technology could actually be good for us for once?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's morning here. You said it's about to be a dinner time right after wrapping this up, but it's great to be able to talk to you, your listeners, and speak to people abroad and all around the world, because it really seems today, especially, that we are all suffering from similar issues, problems in our own countries. Of course, there are specifics to each country, but we'll get into that as we go on today. But again, it's just a great pleasure to be here and be with you.
Terrific. Now, today is a kind of a special day this weekend for you, because it marks the anniversary of perhaps what we might call a groundbreaking interview with one of the stars of pathology, if you will, Dr. Arnie Burkett, who is no longer with us. Can you tell me about how it was that you firstly set up this groundbreaking interview? Because it really was. It was able to fill in a lot of gaps and doubts, et cetera. But why it was so significant to you?
Yeah, a great place to start. So just to provide some background information for the viewers, the listeners who may not be familiar, I am a journalist with The Last American Vagabond, as stated earlier, but I recently, or late last year really, published an interview with a pathologist, Professor Dr. Arne Burkett. He was a German doctor and they used Professor Doctor, but his preferred title was Professor Arne Burkett. He was an incredible pathologist, and I had the chance to sit down with him in his lab, speak to him in English. I was very fortunate he was willing to speak to me in English. Typically, his interviews were done in German, as that was his native language, but I was so fortunate to be able to interview him and do one of the very few rare English language interviews in his lab, and that was filmed 1 year ago on this date, April 20th. It was a Thursday. I will never forget it for the rest of my life because it was such a remarkable interview. But unfortunately, a few weeks after, on May 30th, Professor Burkett had passed away suddenly, unexpectedly, in what has been reported as a very tragic accident. And if those of you would like further details on that and what we do know, I can't share later on. But again, just focusing on the interview here, it is one of his final interviews. You could watch it at thelastamericanvagabond.com. And we discuss a series of around 20 findings from Arna's study in which he examined the autopsy and biopsy materials of patients who died shortly after vaccination or were injured shortly after vaccination. And he is able to apply a specific test using immunohistochemistry staining. I know that's a little bit complex, but it's all described in detail in the interview, in which he is actually able to determine that the lesions observed in the patient, the disease, the cause of death, and the presence of the spike protein that's being expressed is actually caused by the vaccine or the injection, not the viral infection. And this test, of course, is considered in addition to a number of other factors, namely where the lesions were at in the body, as well as just some other factors that he does explain in the interview. But this was such a remarkable interview because this pathologist was able to show that these individuals were very sick post-vaccination or had died post-vaccination. And I think it's remarkable what he had done. He was 79 years old when he unfortunately passed away. He was very sharp, as you can see in the interview. He decided to take it upon himself to not go into retirement. And in 2021, he decided to take it upon himself to provide the family members of loved ones who had lost their loved ones, and provide them with a second opinion autopsy, or at least review the medical findings provided to them by a previous doctor. No other doctors at the time were really willing to do this. Of course, Professor Burkhardt did have some others working with him, but he was really the main individual that was doing this fantastic work. And it just is an interview. If you haven't seen it yet, I encourage you to please do so. Again, that's at thelastamericanvagabond.com. Now, I know that was a long-winded piece of background information, but now let me get to your question here. So I was just always stunned by his work because to me, and to many other doctors too, let me say this, many other doctors said, hey, look, this is the proof here that shows that these vaccines are causing harm. Many doctors and scientists with Doctors for COVID Ethics were stating in late 2020, early 2021, that the mRNA gene-based vaccines would likely lead to blood clots, strokes, and heart attack. They predicted a number of ailments that could result as a consequence of these vaccines. And it was Arna Burkhardt's work that provided these doctors with proof of their hypotheses, with their predictions. So it really put them on solid ground. And I said, I have to talk to this guy. I'm willing to put in the research. This was in early 2021, I want to say, maybe a little bit later in the year, I became familiar with his work. I want to say perhaps in the summertime of that year. But I said, I have to speak with him. I tried for a year to get in touch with him. Of course, he was super busy. So it was a little bit difficult. And then I met him by chance at a conference in September of 2022. I was sitting there. I'll never forget it. He was sitting right next to me. And I had met him on Zoom calls before. And I asked him on these Zoom calls to please do an interview with me. He always said yes. But it was just, you know, difficult because it was such a busy time. This was in 2022. He was sitting next to me. I couldn't believe it. And I introduced myself. I said, Arna, or Professor Burkhardt, I'm Taylor Hudak. I'm a journalist on these calls weekly with you with Doctors for COVID Ethics. And he said, yes, I'll agree to do an interview. Please just send an email here. And so I did. And it took a while to get it together, to get everything situated. But it was really important to him that this was done in English, that it would reach an English speaking audience, and that it was done in person in his lab. And that was obviously my first choice as well. I mean, it's so much better to interview someone in person. Of course, we love Zoom like this, but it's always great to be able to speak in person. And I had that opportunity again 1 year ago on this date, April 20th. And it was such a happy day. And I know that he really enjoyed it as well. And beforehand, as the camera crew was setting up, and I had Oval Media set up and do all the filming for me, the cinematography, they did a fantastic job. Arna was showing me around his lab, and he collected artifacts from the Middle East, from Asia. And it just really showed his full personality in those moments that I had with him. And I feel that we're off camera, and I just feel so blessed and honored that I had those moments. And also too, that I was able to share his work with the English speaking world. And I got it just in time before he left us. And I often think about what other great work he would have done this past year. So it's a really important day and a great day also to reflect upon this interview, talk about the findings, which are all discussed in a way that the average person can understand. That was really important to me. So it took a while to get out, took several months, but I worked with a wonderful medical doctor and medical microbiologist. He was the scientific consultant or scientific advisor rather, and a number of other people as well who were very helpful. They're all credited at the end of the piece, but this is something that you can share with your family members, your loved ones who may start to question the efficacy of these vaccines, but they're not so sure yet. This is definitely the video that you want to give to them.
Have you had the opportunity to show or to sit with people as they watch some or all of this interview and actually see them wake up in real time, or their jaw drop, or they say to you, "My God, I didn't know. Thank you for doing this for me."
I've had an overwhelming amount of very positive feedback with this. Most people actually have told me that it has brought them to tears. Of course, that was not my intention. But it was important to me to honor Arna properly at the end of the, well, throughout the entire interview, but especially at the end, to acknowledge his death in a proper way and in a respectful way. And it really moved people. And also one thing I also do want to mention for those who are non-native English speakers, this interview has been published in German, Italian, French, Hungarian, numerous languages. That's on childrenshealthdefense.eu. And I give so much thanks to those translators who had to translate a very difficult 2.5 hour long interview. I thank them so much for their great work. But again, if you are a non-native English speaker, there are subtitled versions available in multiple languages. But it has moved so many people. The translators as well have told me that it touched them deeply. People have also responded. I've seen the comments online where people have corroborated and said, you know, I'm experiencing this, or I have a friend who is, or my husband, my wife, my sister, brother, that sort of thing. So this has deeply touched people, and I hope it will continue to touch others. And that's exactly, I think, what Arna really wanted. As he told me when this interview was completed, he said, "I'm so happy that this is going to be reaching an English-speaking audience." And it was my, again, as I said, deep pleasure and honor to have that privilege.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it, Taylor, in the news business, that everything is very current. I mean, the pressure to create breaking news and to report it. And yet this is something very, very different. It's a process through a great deception that many people, completely unawares, thrown off the scent, so to speak. And to put together something that took a year just to be able to line up the interview, a long time to be able to edit, and still a year later, it's still current. It's still the leading report in this whole field. In many ways, it's the genesis of truly understanding that there is proof to prove that the solution to this virus was anything but, and in fact was worse than the cause, which is absolutely shocking. And so it is that there's a great reward in all of that, that as a newsmaker, that you can produce something as timely and as long, with longevity for all of us to get in touch with. Now, we're going to have to take a break. We're going to come back. There's a lot more to come. But in the meantime, if you would like to see all of your favorite freedom fighters on one stage or across one weekend, you need to listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shimarani, Dolores Cahill, Matthew Letissier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, allegedly Dave Sovereign Pete, and many, many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to bring is a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes. There's food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will all be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. Don't hang around, because only a limited number of places are still available. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to TNT.
TNT's Lembit Open.
Money is a problem for you. Does that make you into a communist?
Not at all. Not at all. It's just the way that money is brought into circulation. You know, most people don't understand that concept. We live in a debt-based fiat economy. And the way that money is brought into circulation is basically out of thin air. You know, you go to the bank, you ask for a loan, a mortgage or something. The bank doesn't hold those funds within their vaults, whatever you want to call it. And then they literally press a button and that money gets brought into circulation through thin air through the Bank of England and given to that person. And then that person has to pay that money back with interest on top. So that whole concept of the way money is brought into circulation, it is a form of control.
Flip it. OPEC. And today's news talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. Today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking! Damn.
TNT.
Welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour, Hungarian-born journalist Taylor Hudak, who has been explaining with her work for The Last American Vagabond and Children's Health Defense EU about a remarkable, groundbreaking interview with the late Dr. Arnie, or Professor Arnie Burkhardt, and the proof that it was the jabs all along. Taylor, now it's time to present some of the key findings as a result of your interview.
Absolutely. Happy to do so. And again, this is all presented in the full interview in a way that's easy to understand for the average person. Now, just to be clear, again, Professor Burkhardt's findings were also seen by other pathologists. So other pathologists were doing this work using the immunohistochemistry or IHC staining method and were finding similar results, were coming to similar conclusions. So I don't want anybody to take away from this, or have the impression rather, that Professor Burkhardt perhaps was just one of the only pathologists that was coming to these findings. There were others as well. They're mentioned throughout the interview. And again, he was getting requests from family members who lost loved ones to the jab who were dissatisfied with the initial autopsy. Oftentimes these initial autopsies stated that the cause of death was a natural cause. And so Arne Burkhardt was the one that was willing to step up and provide that second opinion autopsy. So now let's get to the findings. One that Professor Burkhardt had pointed out as being one of the most alarming findings, he said, and I'm looking at the Substack right now. This is all available in shorter segments on Substack, but just to make sure that I get my medical terminology right, as I have researched this for quite a while, I'm still, of course, a journalist, not a medical professional, but I have learned a lot in the process. And one of the most concerning findings, as I said, was the vasculitis of the small blood vessels in the brain. Professor Burkhardt said that he found this in almost all of the vaccinated patients that he had examined. And of course, everybody was vaccinated and their vaccine status is provided during the interview. That information is made available. And vasculitis is inflammation of the blood vessels in the brain. And as I said, he reported that just about all, if not all, of the individuals had this condition, this vasculitis in the brain. And this has very serious consequences. And I have heard reports of others who have been jabbed who have had these symptoms. And this includes periods of blindness, loss of speech, loss of hearing, and loss of consciousness. Sometimes it's transient, often it's transient, so it doesn't last too long, but if it is more severe, it can last for longer periods of time. And this was deeply concerning to Professor Burkhardt, and he also went on to say that this could account for many people having a change of character or having a change in personality after vaccination. And when I asked him, look, could somebody who's jabbed have vasculitis of the small blood vessels of the brain and not even realize it, because it was something that he was seeing so often, and not everybody necessarily had symptoms, or at least initially, or at least took note of these symptoms. And he said yes, and he was very concerned about this finding. And that, again, that information is available in its own article on the Last American Vagabonds Substack. But again, I mean, this is very serious here, that we are having complications and complications of people's ability to function, to speak, to see, to hear, to engage with society. So that was one of the significant findings. Another one that I want to highlight here is sudden death of a healthy 29-year-old male who actually had a son. I think he was an infant at the time that this 29-year-old had passed away, but he died of a very rare subarachnoid hemorrhage that was found within a vaccine-damaged artery. And this subarachnoid hemorrhage was not caused by an aneurysm. And this is so incredibly rare. When I did a basic research on a non-aneurysmal subarachnoid hemorrhage, my basic research showed to me that this was something that they did not even have proper statistics on, because it was happening so rarely. And again, this is also available on the Last American Vagabonds Substack in detail. But what I do want to point out is, again, this individual had no prior illnesses, no prior conditions before getting vaccinated. And unfortunately, he died suddenly, but he also had mild myocarditis and he had spike protein expression in the testis. So what are the chances that this 29-year-old healthy male would have these three unusual conditions? Again, that's the subarachnoid hemorrhage in the brain that caused his death, spike protein expression in the testis, as well as mild myocarditis. What are the chances that that just happened to this individual, and it was not caused by this experimental injection that he received shortly before his death? So it's just an interesting thing to point out. And there are numerous cases in which one individual had several complications. So it's not just this case, but this was something that was seen very often. And so I just want to point out those two findings in particular. And when I asked him also too, I mean, Professor Burkhart was doing 1,500 to 2,000 autopsies per year before the COVID crisis happened, before these vaccines were rolled out onto the public. And then in this series of 75 autopsies on vaccinated patients, he saw 5 cases of myocarditis, but out of previously the 1,500 to 2,000 autopsies that he had done in the past before the vaccines, he saw about 1 or 2 cases of myocarditis a year. Similar findings with an aortic dissection as well. So I hope those stats are clear. Again, 1,500 to 2,000 autopsies a year. Pre-COVID vaccine saw 1 to 2 cases of myocarditis a year. In the series of 75 autopsies in which all patients were vaccinated, he saw 5 cases of myocarditis. So serious findings. And I mean, that number is, that's an astronomical increase in my view.
Of course it is. I mean, 1 in 15, if you're considering 5 out of 75 in myocarditis in the post 2021 period, as opposed to numbers like 1 in 750 or as high as 1 in 2,000, if he was doing that many autopsies in a year. I mean, they're orders of magnitude difference. It's ironic, isn't it, that people will still try and tell you that COVID causes myocarditis more than the vaccine. And we know that that's an absolute nonsense argument. But this, again, shows us what the scientific community is prepared to do to blur the edges of this. Did Professor Burkhart have anything to say about this specifically? Because you did mention that all of these cases that he were looking at did on their record say they were vaccinated.
Yes, exactly. They were vaccinated throughout the video. It explains exactly their vaccine status, what type of vaccine they got, how many, and how many if they did pass away, which the majority did. when they, how many days post-vaccination that they had passed away, their age, and also their gender is made available for just about every single case. I think there's maybe two or three where not all of that information was available, but it's all in there. Now, again, I want to go back just quickly to the testing. How are they able to determine that this myocarditis, for example, or any of these ailments is caused by the vaccine or injection and not the virus? And again, that's this testing staining mechanism that they use, the immunohistochemistry or IHC. They test for both the spike protein and the nucleocapsid protein in the virus cell, or the virus itself, rather, has both the spike protein and the nucleocapsid, whereas the vaccine only has the spike protein particle. So they test, they use the staining method, and if it's positive for spike protein and the nucleocapsid is negative, that's a very strong indication that the spike protein expression is from the vaccine. If they're both positive, then it's more likely that the spike protein expression is coming from the virus itself. I know this is a lot to take in, but it's explained in depth in the video. And of course, it's not just this testing mechanism that he uses. He considers numerous other factors when making that determination as to whether or not the vaccine or injection caused the person's death or disease. It's very thorough, and other pathologists were able to corroborate these findings.
And so was he able to draw any conclusions, perhaps in terms of percentage, therefore, that how many of these myocarditis deaths were caused by the vaccine?
Good question. In fact, he did not do that, because I think, again, I'm speculating at this point. That was really something that I wanted to bring up. I wanted to know, okay, how often were you seeing this then compared to now? I don't think that Arna necessarily himself viewed his findings in that way. Again, he wasn't looking at statistics necessarily, but was looking at individual cases and examining them. And also, too, I know there is an argument that his 1,500 to 2,000 autopsies are not necessarily representative of the entire global population, of course, but still, it's significant. I think it's statistically significant, but that was more something that I noticed on my own and kind of reported on. It was not something that Arna himself had made note of, at least that I'm aware of.
And so it is that at some point you have to be able to draw conclusions or find trends in this particular work. I mean, the numbers are obvious. I find it very disturbing that the medical profession will stand there and look you dead in the eye when you present information such as this and say correlation doesn't prove causation. And yet the same exact people will tell you that 4 parts per million of carbon dioxide is causing the earth to heat up and the ice to melt, so we'll drown. And this is the crazy part, isn't it?
It's absolutely crazy. And that's the great thing, again, about this work that Arna was doing and the work of other pathologists like Dr. Michael Mertz and Dr. Ryan Cole and so many others, and Uta Kruger. These doctors, when they are in the field of pathology, they are actually looking for the causes behind the disease. They are looking at what's actually happening on a pathological level, obviously, whereas so much of the information, I think, has been really focused on the numbers and the stats and the data, which is obviously very important. But this, in my opinion, this work here really helps give even more weight, more substantiation to those numbers to show that there is causation, actually. So this work, in my view, shows causation, strong causation that the COVID injection is causing these ailments, these diseases, and the deaths.
And the most important part of that, of course, is that there has been so many denials for so long, the obfuscation here in Australia. We had our TGA sit. Their process was to sit in a room with a group of 10 or 12 so-called experts and examine on paper reports to determine if the vaccine could have caused the death of an individual. And over however many years it's been now, they've sat on something like 11 deaths caused by the vaccine, all of those attributed to AstraZeneca that's no longer available in this country. And they cannot attribute a single death to Pfizer or Moderna. and that flies against the work that you've done here with Dr. Burkhart. Does that make you frustrated, crazy, or do you feel like that you're just in amidst a scientific fraud of proportions we could never have imagined?
I think the latter, really. And I thought that since early on during this crisis in early 2020, when there was all this panic, I just thought there is something to this. This is not good. This is not going to end well. But I wasn't quite sure again at that time what the end goals were, what they were trying to do. But I knew something wasn't right when you had all of the media working together, saying the same exact thing, when you had all these different governments working together, taking the same different policies. I knew it wasn't good. And so I feel like we're almost getting used to the insanity at this point. But I think people should be encouraged to know that there are great doctors out there, like Professor Burkhart. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but there are others who are doing this work, your previous guest, and so many others, especially with Doctors for COVID Ethics, a group that I work with. And I think we can find hope in each other, and also realize too that we have built new communities and we have found new friends, new colleagues, new associates throughout this crisis. Of course, we would prefer not to be existing in a world like this, but I think more people are waking up and becoming aware. And by spreading this information, by supporting doctors who are speaking out, also too, I want to make note there's a doctor, Dr. Charles Hoff in Canada, who is being persecuted quite significantly right now, and I would encourage people to support him. I will post some more information on my Telegram about his work, but he recently did an interview and has done several interviews. He did one recently with UK Column, but Dr. Charles Hoff under attack like so many other doctors, and we need to support these guys, also the nurses, the medical professionals, the dissident voices.
No, absolutely. Now, you mentioned early on that Dr. Burkhart died suddenly in May, shortly after the interview, and you alluded to the circumstances. Did you want to say something about that?
Yes, sure. So, of course, there's obviously a lot of curiosity as to what happened. I was shocked when I found out that he had passed away. He passed away on May 30th. When I met with him a year ago on this date, on April 20th, I saw a very healthy man, very mobile, active. So this was a huge shock. But I know, of course, things can happen, especially as you get a little bit older. But I also want to make note, too, that on May 3rd of last year, Professor Burkhart delivered, quite a lengthy presentation on his findings as well before the European Parliament. So that was on May 3rd. On May 30th, he unfortunately passed away, and what is reported to have happened, close colleagues have confirmed this, but it was also in the newspaper, in German newspapers, was that it's a very tragic report, the report's very tragic. And it states that he unfortunately passed away during a tragic accident when he was trying to save his son, who was a teenager, had some issues. I'm trying to think of the right word to use here, but had a handicap, and he jumped into the water or something happened. Arna went in to try to rescue him. Somehow, people nearby on this lake were notified about this, or they caught their attention, and so they called the authorities. And then in one of the reports, it said that Arna was, they couldn't find him. They found the son, but they couldn't find Arna for some time. And then he was actually discovered by helicopters. His body was floating a little bit ways away from where the initial incident had taken place. And it stated in this report that the people who were working in the helicopter were very distressed because they could see his body floating, but they couldn't do anything. And it took some time for them to get somebody out there into the water to rescue him. And I think he was then eventually, I want to say he was lifelighted to a hospital or emergency center, and then passed away from what sounds like an accidental drowning. Again, I could not even report about this as fact with a journalistic standard, because there really isn't strong proof that this is Professor Burkhart, but his colleagues have stated that it is about him. So that is the understanding at this time, that is how he passed away. So I just wanted to share that. I know people are curious.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you being able to share it in such a sad, horrible way that you would think that such a man of such stature contributing this piece of science at the most important time, really, in all of human history, and such a horrific way to go, Taylor, that it breaks our heart to think that this poor man had to suffer in any way. Now, we do have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears because we're going to talk about a couple of topics dear to the heart of Taylor. One is what's happening in the EU in terms of censorship, and the other one, especially for here in Australia, the topic of Julian Assange, perhaps the most significant journalist, if you will, in the modern era as we fight for this potential fall of Rome, if you will. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekends here on TNT.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go, but I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there, providing hot meals, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding.
To learn more, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
When the whole world seems turned upside down, we sort through it together. Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk TNT.
I'm wondering what the greatest deception is in terms of how we view our government, authority, the media, in terms of how we look at day-to-day basis. Now, one might look at a whistleblower and think, how come the government a few years back was so enamored with whistleblower laws to the point now that if you're a whistleblower, you don't really have any protections whatsoever? None. It's almost as if you come out and say something against the system, watch out. And I'm reminded this week by watching a couple of videos circulating on social media about this character known as P. Diddy, and this weird relationship he had with Justin Bieber. And then, of course, it snowballed. And as it would happen, another video popped up explaining what happens at Hollywood parties. And all of a sudden, you realize that there is this big club. And in that big club, there is also a code of conduct, and all lips are sealed. And it kind of said to me that this is probably the reason why the whistleblowers can't seem to blow the whistle and be respected with the laws in name only. Now, that's a big setup, but I wanted to talk to Taylor now about Julian Assange, because if you just look at the evidence as a journalist, how can this not be mainstream headline day after day after day, and those people held accountable, responsible for the information that has been discovered by a man just doing what a journalist is meant to do, and to provide evidence, research, and news to the people about what's really going on and how our world is really run, I should say. Taylor, how do you feel about this Julian Assange story? Where and what should happen with this man, and how bad does it look for the establishment who will do anything to pretend he's the bad guy?
Right. Well, I have been covering this case for several years now. In fact, the extradition proceedings in the courts began in February of 2020, and that process is still ongoing. Meanwhile, he has been incarcerated for now 5 years. He was arrested and put into Belmarsh Prison in the UK on April 11th of 2019. So it's now been 5 years that he's been in a maximum security prison in the UK. Of course, all people who care about human rights, who care about this man's life, this innocent man's life, they care about free speech, free press, and all of those issues. All of us, of course, support his release and for the Biden administration to drop these charges and for Assange to no longer face threat of prosecution in the United States or anywhere. That would be obviously the best outcome at this point. He should have never been incarcerated to begin with, never detained to begin with, never should have had to experience any legal repercussions for his activities. He engaged in standard, normal journalistic activity that journalists do all the time, but he is being targeted, singled out, and it's now on all of us to talk about this case like we are now. And then also for those in the United States, there's a lot of heat on this case right now. A lot of people are talking about it. Please, if you can, call your representatives in Australia, your MPs. If you're in England, your MPs, Europe, wherever you are, call your representatives, call your MPs, and let them know politely and kindly, of course, that you do not like to see this case continue, that you would like the case to be dropped. You're concerned about what this means for the First Amendment, for human rights, the free speech and free press laws in your own country, et cetera. So I would encourage people to do that. Unfortunately, the United States continues to pursue this case. There was, however, and I do want to make this point, it hasn't been talked about too much, but there was, however, some indication in a report that was released by the Wall Street Journal a few weeks ago stating that the United States was seeking a potential plea deal with Mr. Assange. However, one of his U.S. lawyers stated that he wasn't aware of this, but I also understand wanting to keep something like this private. But then CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou came out publicly and said that Assange was offered a plea deal to plead guilty to a lesser charge of mishandling of classified material, and he would be released. The whole thing would be over. He would be able to go back to Australia. And Assange said no. And I just think that is so commendable on his part. It really shows how principled of a man he is and how much willpower he has. At the same time, I also think that one man shouldn't take the fall for the entire free press. That's also a hard thing to come to terms with here. And I understand that a precedent would be set if he were to make this plea deal, but if he's extradited and tried and convicted, I think an even worse precedent would be set. So it was a little bit sad to me to hear that he didn't want, of course, the decision is on him, but it made me sad if he was feeling perhaps that he had to bear this weight on his shoulders, that is the weight of the free press. And I hope that he knows that he has the support, that he will always be viewed heroic and favorably by the public for the work that he has done and that he has suffered enough. And if that's the choice that he wants to make a deal, then he should be celebrated and encouraged to make whatever choice is right for him, even if that means making this plea deal, because I do not think that anyone should lose their life and should suffer in a U.S. maximum security prison for the work that he has done. And one man, as I said, should not carry that burden. But again, this case is still progressing. The U.S. government offered their assurances just recently, and we know that the assurances don't really mean much. So the case progresses, unfortunately, and we have to keep our eye on it.
That's an extraordinary revelation. And for those that have been following in Julian's case for a long time, probably wouldn't expect anything less, but his life has changed right. significantly in that he's now married to Stella and he has two beautiful boys that he hasn't really been able to have anything to do with. And one would wonder as a father to be able to be locked up on a daily basis and to still go the high road on principle is something that many of us would not ever have the ability or the courage or the kahunas to be able to do that. And more credit to him, but gosh, I feel for Stella and the boys. That is just something else. It is unimaginable as a father myself. I just don't think I could do that, Taylor.
Right. I agree. It's very painful to think about all of this and all the suffering that he has gone through. But my point was just that I hope that he feels support, knowing that he will always be, you know, admired regardless of whatever decision he makes, and that he does not need to carry the burden for all of the press. And yes, I do still understand, of course, the terrible precedent that could be set for the press at the same time. But I hope that he has that support and feels it. Of course, the public's on his side. Many politicians, world leaders are on his side. This continued prosecution is so unfavorable. And it really is, it doesn't look good for the United States either. It's in the best interest of the U.S. to drop this case as well, because it just doesn't look good. The U.S. can no longer continue this prosecution against him, threaten their own First Amendment, but then point out the flaws in other countries like they like to do all the time, say, for example, with Iran and Russia. They can't continue to do this if they are prosecuting Mr. Assange. Enough is enough here. And there is bipartisan support from both Democrats and Republicans, both sides of the political spectrum, who are calling for the Biden administration to drop this case. So it is very unpopular. And it's great to see that there is some initiatives. And again, it goes back to my point of, please encourage your representatives to support these initiatives and talk to them about this case politely, and encourage them to step up and make a difference. And we saw some motions coming out of Australia as well. Australian Parliament advocating for the U.S. to drop the case. And President Biden at one point said that they were considering it. It's unclear exactly, given the fact that the U.S. just issued its assurances a few days ago. But I still think there's an opportunity to apply the right amount of polite pressure on your representatives to help make a change. And I don't mean to repeat myself so much. It's just so important. So I just want people to remember that today.
Yes, it is. Now, has Robert Kennedy Jr. made any calls in terms of dropping the charges against Assange if he was to win the Oval Office?
Yes, I believe so. Early on, he did make statements that were at least very favorable of Assange, that he did not support the continued prosecution. So that's a very good thing. And it should be unacceptable for politicians and those running for the presidency to support this continued prosecution. That's what we would want, of course, in a perfect world. And I'm hopeful that that day will come. And another hearing at this time is scheduled to take place on May 20th. And that's a permission to appeal hearing, in which these panel of two judges will then decide if Assange may appeal extradition. Once again, there was a hearing similar to this that took place in February on the 20th and 21st, but there was quite a bit of confusion there. But what happened is that they're basically going to almost redo this hearing for one day. It'll be about 2 hours long, and perhaps this will continue to be the fight against extradition will continue in the UK domestic courts. If they allow the appeal, if they do not allow the appeal, then the extradition process, I believe, would begin. There is still perhaps an opportunity for Mr. Assange to then apply before the European Court of Human Rights, but that's where the case stands right now.
Now, it's also my understanding that at some point when he was president, Donald Trump offered some form of pardon to Assange should he give up his source for the Democratic hack. Is that true?
Now we're going back, huh? Yes, I remember this. There was a lot of pressure on President Trump. It was a long shot, but there was a lot of pressure on him to pardon Julian Assange. There should have been. And I did my best to try to apply that pressure as well. So many of us did. It was a large campaign. Unfortunately, it was unsuccessful. But again, it was the Trump administration that brought forth these charges, that allowed for his arrest. Unfortunately, he surrounded himself with some not so great people like Mike Pompeo, who referred to WikiLeaks as a non-state hostile intelligence agency. And it's unfortunate what had happened. And then now you have, ironically, the Biden administration aligning with the Trump administration's view on this issue, because the Barack Obama administration chose not to prosecute Assange And of course, that's the administration in which Joe Biden served as vice president. So it's interesting to see the Biden administration align itself with Trump on this issue.
It's interesting, isn't it? As they say about Mike Pompeo, you can take the man out of the CIA, but you can't take the CIA out of the man in his particular case. It's just a revolting scenario. And one wonders if Trump regains office. It's my humble opinion, and others are also starting to agree with me, that he will appoint Kennedy as his attorney general. And I think that was when we start to see a real plan to drain the swamp, God willing. I guess it's a bit of a political fantasy, but anything's got to be better than the status quo that we've seen for so long. Now, Taylor, we've only got 3 minutes left. I was hoping to just get a quick comment due to the lack of time about censorship in the European Union and what's going on there.
Yes, I'll be brief here. So the European Union, in particular, the Commission had put forward a proposal in September of 2022 called the European Media Freedom Act, the EMFA. It has nothing to do with media freedom. It essentially seeks to centralize the entire EU media sector into a single market that will be overseen by a new European Board for Media Services, which is heavily run and controlled by the Commission. So you heard me. A new European Board for Media Services is going to be overseeing the media in the EU. And this is a regulation that has been proposed. And this is potentially, there's been discussion of if this is even legal, because it's been traditionally left up to the member states to determine how they want to work their own media policy. But unfortunately, and I really do mean it, it is unfortunate. It is called the European Media Freedom Act, but it has nothing to do with media freedom. Unfortunately, this proposal has advanced through the legislative process. It's been approved by the European Parliament. They're right on schedule. They wanted to get this approved before the elections, the upcoming elections this year. It seems that they are going to achieve that. I've written an article on it at childrenshealthdefense.eu. It's called Centralizing Information Control Inside the EU's Latest Proposal to Censor the Media. It also places restrictions on the media that people within the EU can access. It also restricts press organizations from outside the EU from being able to have their work shared, seen, and read by individuals within the EU. It also places it gives more rights to censor and restrict information. It gives rights to the very large online platforms, which is like YouTube, Twitter, Google, all of those big tech platforms. This is something that ought to be rejected. Don't be fooled by the positive language that's used when it's being discussed. It is not a good thing, and it should be rejected.
Absolutely. You've said it perfectly. Taylor, it's been a delight to be able to speak with you in live and in the flesh over Zoom in this new digital space. Your work is impeccable, it's groundbreaking, and it's a thrill to be able to observe. Don't miss out. Go to The Last American Vagabond and start there for Taylor's work. Thank you, Taylor. Amazing. Now, that's the end of the show for today for me, but Alex is up next. You're going to get a tech special event straight after the break. I'll be back tomorrow with another bonanza for you. You don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to TNT.